of all the movies that have you come back on Fergal, this is probably the one.
They could have gotten David Hasselhoff to do a walkthrough.
I'm always like, I don't know, it's about spies. Back to you, Chris.
I wonder if I can still fit this in Jordan's.
Well, that's nice. I expected a full gut punch out of that.
Welcome to the show.
Hello, and welcome to Movie
Smash!
Hello and welcome to Movie Smash, the show where we dive headfirst into comic book movies outside the MCU. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. If you've been here before, you know the drill. Each episode, we're going to smash for a movie whose source material is from a graphic novel or a comic. Is it worth revisiting? Should it be forgotten? Let's find out. This is Movie Smash. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Roberts. I'm the founder of Off Panel Creations. With me today, I have Jeremy Parmentier.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Parmentier. I'm also a double agent on the Retrovaniacs podcast, and I'm very excited that Fergal is here as well.
I am Fergal Amayo. Apparently, I am unkillable. I'm going to leave that. Somehow, I have inherited John Wick's talents, and perhaps Charlie Theron as well. I'm a triple agent of chaos. I'm that guy that follows behind you in Allstate. State Farm, have it. So I am glad to be here and talking about this movie.
And we have a guest host with us today, Lori Calcaterra, writer of The Path of the Pale Rider.
Yes, that's me. I'm Lori Calcaterra. I am, what Christopher said, I am the writer-creator of a Western Apocalypse comic book series called Path of the Pale Rider. It's the coolest zombie apocalypse you have not read. You got to check us out. We have zombie ethics and giant undead bears.
The dead don't die.
What's not to like?
I just get it just for the bears.
I know. Like, seriously, Big James, our undead bear, is everybody's fan favorite. We have, like, Big James merch. Big James.
I've been seeing that, too. Lori Calcaterra, by the way, is a dear friend of mine and amazing. So you need to check her story out.
With Cocaine Bear coming out this year, bears are hot right now.
We were dropping issue number 3 with this beautiful yellow, red, and black cover with Big James on it. And it dropped the same Friday that Cocaine Bear hit the theater. So it was perfect timing. We sold a bunch of those. But we came first. We were written in 2018 and first published in 2022. So Cocaine Bear, we're the original.
Our movie tonight is not Cocaine Bear, and it did come out before 2018. Tonight's movie is 2017's Atomic Blonde, starring Charlize Theron, James McAvoy, and John Goodman, directed by David Leitch.
The subject of this debriefing, British operational officer, Lorraine Broughton.
Before we begin, sir, may I formally request that Mr. Kurtzfeld be removed?
I could stand behind the mirror with everybody else.
Asshole.
What did you say?
I didn't say anything.
I thought you said something.
What did she say?
Do you want to play the tape back?
I know she doesn't play by our rules. But she's our best intelligence expert. There's a double agent operating in Berlin. If we don't find him before the wall falls, we could be facing World War III. Remember, trust no one.
Lori, you picked this movie. Why did you choose this one?
I'm a big fan of 8711. If for those that don't know my story, I actually started my whole journey by doing martial arts. I was choreographing fight scenes for a production company in Detroit called Coattail Collective. And that's how Trinity 60 started. That was the name of my fight team. And so when you have movies that you have a whole studio that produces movies that was started by two stuntmen, you know the action's going to be good. There's nothing more painful to me, and probably you guys too, to watch a movie with fights in it where the actor clearly is miming the movements. Like, they're not even making contact. It's painful to watch, and it takes me out of the movie. So with things like John Wick, Atomic Blonde, Bullet Train, I mean, I have a whole list of them. Let's see, Hobbs and Shaw, Deadpool 2,
yes.
Fall Guy. These are the movies that 8711 is producing. I love these. So when we were picking out movies, I picked out a few, but Atomic Blonde with Charlize Theron and just the fight sequences that are put into this movie, I really like to talk about them. I would love to talk about them with you guys. The movie itself is fabulous. I haven't seen it in a long time. So this was a great chance to refresh and really enjoy something that's really, I think, underrated. I think more people should watch this one.
Yeah, and I wish this production company was around to do other movies we've seen, like Daredevil. I think it would have taken those movies to a whole new level for us.
Right. Oh, gosh. Can you imagine?
So this movie is based upon the comic The Coldest City. Have any of you read this comic, and what was your experience with it?
I've got it on order right now. I apologize. You know, I'm not even apologizing. I've been on amend, so I didn't get a chance. But I do know Anthony Johnson. This, you know, this is an interesting story. He was Ninth Art, which was his formed kind of company, was all about taking graphic novels up a notch. And this is actually a really good story for a book. And quite frankly, it got picked up almost immediately. You know, and I mean literally almost immediately. As soon as he had this story out, it literally was picked up. It was renamed Atomic Blonde. And if you go look at the story now, it's called The City Atomic Blonde. So, I mean, he's a discerning, and he's done Marvel work, which is interesting, and Image work.
I didn't know it existed before today, but I did my due diligence. I was like, oh, it's a graphic novel. And I wanted to see if they had changed much. And apparently the story is still the story. They only changed one of the characters in the story that was male, then became the female character, the French spy. But other than that, the story is what you get. And that's not normal. Usually when you get an adaptation, they like to change a bunch of things and call it the same name, which pisses us all off, of course. But it was a true adaptation of that story, which I think is great.
So when did you guys originally see this movie?
I saw it at the theaters.
2017 when it came out.
I'm a bit of a Charlize Theron fan. I think she's a badass lady. I'm just going to say it right out now. She probably one of the best action stars on the scene today. Still.
I think so. I mean, and she's gotten better. Mad Max, Fury Road, Old Guard is dope.
Yes, Old Guard is dope as shit. Can I just say that? It's dope as shit.
Well, Fergal, it's not the rating you gave it when we reviewed Old Guard. That's not what you gave it when we talked about it then. You did not give it a dope as shit. You gave it a much lower rating than that.
The fighting was, it wasn't as dope as shit, but I mean, it's still the movie itself had a lot of holes, but Charlize Theron, I'm telling you, this lady, I would not want to meet her in a back alley. She'd kick my ass and take my wallet.
Jeremy, did you get a chance to see this movie before our viewing this time?
No, I of course. I didn't see it yet. I'm going to wing it.
No, I mean, in the past.
No, I had not seen this before, and I didn't know it was based on a graphic novel. I did try to go buy it, and I couldn't find it near me, so I could buy it online. But I did read they have a free preview up of the first 8 or 9 pages if you actually go to the artist's website or the author's website. So I did read the very beginning. It does seem like it follows what this movie does start, although it does make the an interesting choice of character change for Percival, at least in the first 8 or 9 pages when they were first introduced to Percival. He seems much more like an older, more kind of stodgy spy as opposed to the character he's in this movie, but the rest of it did feel very similar. It was definitely the same setting. I'm looking forward to reading the graphic novel whenever I finally get around to it. So I saw the movie this week, and therefore it's new to me.
For me personally, I when this came out, I wanted to go see it. I used to live in West Germany for years, so a movie set in that time period, I was like, I've got to see this. You know, it's I love that style of music. I loved it. Reminded me of my time there, and I wanted this movie, but I missed it. I wasn't able to go see it. And then I came out.
99 Tough Balloons you missed out on in the theater.
What I meant by that was that then I went out and I bought the steelbook of it sometime a couple years ago, and it's been sitting on my shelf until late last year when I finally got around to watching this movie. And we'll get into it, my thoughts on it, but yeah, I left Germany around, I think it was 86. Fall of Berlin Wall was definitely years after I left it. I loved things set in Cold War Germany just because it's like looking at your old hometown. Fergal, since you're back, why don't we have you do it? Do you have any background on this comic before us?
Again, just going back, it was written in 2012 by Anthony Johnson. It's a guy who's kind of an English-born comic graphic novel adaptation guy. Fun fact about him, he did Alex Rider. He converted that incredibly popular Alex Rider story to comics, done some probably one of the coolest Marvel stories, Wolverine Prodigal Son. And this book just was one of his, you know, in his style. He won a lot of awards for kind of taking characters and making actual original work. So this was original work by this guy. So that's kind of the story behind him and the story and his love of it and his process. And he had another book called Coldest Winter. which is the after story of this.
So if this is your first time joining us, just a quick heads up. We're going to be discussing the plot of this movie, maybe discussing some elements of the story that might be considered a spoiler, so consider yourself warned.
I mean, it came out in 2017, so...
You would be surprised by some of the comments we get saying people, we spoiled movies that have been out for 15 years.
People were very, very upset about our Superman review from 1978. Very upset.
Catch up.
Laurie, since you picked this movie, why don't you run us through the plot of it? Just a quick synopsis, if you could.
I wrote it down. I made it like super schnazzy. All right. Atomic Blonde. And I'm just going to give like a brief overview. It's like John Wick meets The Usual Suspects with spies set in Cold War Berlin while the wall is actually falling. This spy action drama by 8711 is full of, it's star-studded with this Charlize Theron and James McAvoy kicking the shit out of everything and everybody as they try to figure out who is the double agent. Plot twist will just leave you wondering if anything that you saw was actually true. 9 out of 10 stars.
That's a great synopsis. Jeremy, she has a much better job than you.
You should do it every time. I'm always like, I don't know, it's about spies. Back to you, Chris.
Well, no, your synopsis are at like one sentence or like 7 pages.
Okay, look, I made a mistake twice where I did like a full synopsis plot and you're like, what are you doing? So now they're all a sentence to two sentences.
Charlie goes back, kicks ass, and just ends the ass kicking and doesn't stop. And then it turns out she's got ass to kick in other directions. You don't see that.
Ass kicking doesn't stop. But what I love about it is it's a retelling because the movie starts 10 days after all the action. And our Lorraine is sitting in a room retelling the story to these two, basically the head of her superior MI6 and someone from CIA. Right. And she's retelling the story. So you're getting her version of it. And so by the time you get to the end, after all the twists have come out, you're like, did anything she say actually happen?
Yeah, she is definitely an untrusting narrator in this movie.
Yeah.
So why don't we start with her? Let's start with Lorraine, Charlize Theron. What do you guys think of that character?
I thought she was dope. I thought she had she played it real. So I think that's what makes, again, like, there are movies that she's in that aren't great. Ogard. Great movie, had some efforts need to be fixed in. But when you look at her in almost every movie she's in, she plays a character extremely well. She dedicates to the craft. So in this movie, she dedicated, like, she wasn't a person who didn't look like she got her ass whipped, but that she kicked everyone's ass. And it just felt like she had a level of, like, when you called her in, that was the end of the road. That's the whole story. Like, when you called, like, she was the nobody. She was the auditor. When she came to the table, you were pretty much not walking out. And who they put her against is, I mean, they kept getting bigger. The guys kept getting bigger and she kept kicking their ass over and over again.
What I don't like to see in action movies is women fighting like men. We can't punch you out with one punch. We're not going to. We're smaller than you. We don't have enough muscle mass. She was using flexible weapons. She was using her body weight. She was smart about it. And that's how a woman would fight in that situation against multiple opponents and larger opponents. And some guys whooped her butt in the beginning and she had to like reprocess, like, okay, that's not going to work. That giant blonde guy kicked her ass 3 times before she finally put him out of his misery. I was just like, not this guy again. But yeah, it was pretty accurate with the fighting style. And again, that's 8711 knowing, you know, like how a woman, an unarmed woman would try to fight these thugs. And it's accurate. It's really good. But yeah, she kicks ass.
She does. Everyone knows I love Charlize Theron in a movie, especially an action movie. She always brings the table. She studies, I think for this role, she studied 6 months of martial arts with that team to prepare herself for the role. In fact, Fergal, you mentioned how the script got picked up immediately, or at least the rights got picked up immediately. She was the one who picked them up. The one thing I love about Charlize Theron is that most of her movies are from her own production company.
Yes.
She doesn't look for work. She makes work. She creates these roles for people she knows and jobs for them. And she went out and got this the screen rights for this. And the reason that they got the team to make this movie was because they showed her just basically like some storyboards. But it was a scene where she's coming out of the bathtub. That was the storyboard they showed her. And that's what sold her on the idea of their version of the events.
Just Charlize beat up to shit.
Yes, even the knuckles looking some kind of way.
Covered in bruises.
Lighting up a cigarette like there's no problem. Like there's no problem. Like she's just, that's what blew me away. Like she got out of that. Like me, I'm trying to get this arm to move somewhere. And she just rolls up out and lights up a smoke and she's ready to go back to town again.
God. Well, I actually looked at the storyboards for it. And it was crazy. They actually wrote on there, not bubble bath, ice. To make sure they got it across that this is not. No, she is not the type of person taking like a hot bubble bath, sipping her tea. Like she has been beaten up. She's just.
She's got a black eye.
There was originally supposed to be, I guess she like had a prostitute or a lover over the evening, but they got rid of all that to show that she is all business. That's she's not in England to have fun. She's there because she has to go debrief and that's it.
Another thing I learned about her training. So John Wick came out in February of John Wick 2, the second one came out February 10th. 2017, and Atomic Blonde came out July 28th, 2017. Keanu Reeves and Charlize Theron were training together by the same stunt guys because the same stunt guys do both of those movies. And so they were training together for these. So you can see some of it in their moves. I was like,
That was Chad Stahelski and Kim McCormick that were training both of them at the same time.
Say again?
That was Chad Stahelski and Kim McCormick, the two people from 8711. They were doing both their training at the same time. That's dope. Because, I mean, John, like, that dude is just, I wouldn't want to mess with him either.
I think it was a 6-week crossover where the training coincided with one another. She is basically the female Keanu Reeves, or Keanu is the male Charlize Theron, however you want to look at that.
Yeah, their characters are pretty similar. Their fighting style was similar. They both used jiu-jitsu and aikido. You can see it in the throws, and then they're both weapon experts, picking up anything, weapon of opportunity. But their gun handling skills were both spot on. I really enjoyed that one scene where she comes out the window and she puts the scarf up. Yes. And then they do that. That was all her. And I was like, oh, it's a stunt double until she took the scarf back down and it's still Charlize Theron. And I'm like, oh, okay. Girl has some skill. All right.
So why don't we change gears? I think we can do a love fest for Charlize for a while. But how did James McAvoy do for Percival?
Well, Jeremy said it best, right? I'd let him say it. I mean, you thought he was going to be the old guy. When you look at the plot line, he was supposed to be an MI6 chasing station chief. So it didn't, for me, initially off the get-go, it didn't fit with what the storyline said. It's a station chief. How can a guy who's a station chief be as young as a James McAvoy?
And it wasn't as outlandish. She didn't have, the partying scene and stuff at the beginning. It was like he meets her and it's very much like you're meeting a supervisor, right? It's he picks her up. He's like, oh, let me show you around the city or whatever. But there's none of this like, oh yeah, you see him at the party and then he shows up and he's clearly hungover or whatever. Like none of that's the character that you see, at least again, in the preview panels. They're available for the book. So maybe that there's a drastic change, after that happens in there, but I'll be excited to see. That said, I had read that after I watched the movie. So I really liked this character. At first, I thought it was clearly supposed to be, you figure he's probably the guy you're looking for the whole time. He's probably the bad guy ultimately in this movie, right? He seems like he's got some of those going on. But again, because it's her narrative, that could have been on purpose. You don't really know. So I think he did a great job. I really enjoyed that character. But now I'm interested to see like how different the main, the character is in the graphic novel later.
Yeah, I love this take of it. It was like, and especially he had that sort of that club at the very beginning, the Berlin youth, if you would, going out and doing various crimes for him or picking things up, and he was buying them off with was it Jordache jeans and a bottle of whiskey.
Yeah, he's like, want a pair of jeans?
Help us wonder if I can still fit into some Jordaches. I've always
stop
been
it.
Sure.
Okay, fertile? No.
No.
And stop sending me those pictures.
It's not like you can buy them at Target.
I don't know if I can figure out where Jordache even exists today, but
it's
I'm not
Goodwill.
Curious.
That's it,
the
man.
The wheels are turning.
Oh, you better not.
I do love his style, though. That was very Germany at the time.
Yeah, like punk rock.
It was. The whole movie was Germany. And I think that's the whole problem. Like I don't know. You're the one that lived there, Chris. But as I imagine East and West Berlin, like, and I think about what that looked like, I feel like just before that whole thing went sideways and it all came down, it had to be just like that. Super punk, super like London back in the 70s or 80s, like cult of culture and all kind of crazy shit going on at that time.
So how about, let's switch to Emmett Kurtzfeld. His name was basically Goodman character.
I like that character too, because he had that kind of, you know, oh, he's an American, so he's a little crude almost. Like, he's not gross, but he's just not as formal sounding as the MI6 agent that's there. And I like that, again, I don't want to give away too much.
I
like the role he plays in the movie. Well, we'll get to it at some point, but we're half an hour in. You don't want to ruin
it. I'll do it.
But I like that he plays more of a role than you think. So even when he's in the interview, you can't. I had no idea of the flip that was coming towards the end of this movie because he did such a good job in the role he had.
That's John Goodman right there. I thought he just killed that role. I thought he played a complete spot on, whereas the other guy was trying to get everything out. This guy was just acting exactly. He knew, like, he sort of seemed like he knew what was going on. He knew more than he was letting on.
But you got to say, the moment that the two of them, Charlize and John Goodman, are standing in front of that parking lot, or sorry, no man's land, which is actually a parking lot they converted into that.
Yes.
That scene, you've got to say to yourself, okay, something else is going on.
Why is he there?
Right.
Why is he there?
They're like, we sent you a message. Why is he there? You know what I mean? Like, there
was no sense.
Much. It didn't make sense for him. It was like, MI6 should have sent the message. Why was he there? But that was kind of like their cover, I bet. So again, you're getting her retelling of he was there to give her the message. He could have been there for any reason. And I don't know how many times you've watched that interrogation scene. John Goodman is like, is he buying it? Is he buying it? And he's shifting his eyes, looking at him like, I don't know if he's buying it. Like, he's trying to read Toby to see if he's still on board with the story she's telling him. So when you watch it the second time, you're like, oh, there it is.
I'm glad you said that. The first time I watched it, I thought that was a potential plot hole. I was like, why is this guy in Berlin? This makes no sense. I mean, it's the danger zone, right? Why is this head of the high up in CIA out in the open with this spy? This makes no sense. Watch it the second time, you're like, yeah, it makes complete sense why he's there. It makes complete sense why they're interacting, why she's bringing it up the way she's bringing it up in that story.
Yeah. I think she was trying to tell him that's the whole purpose, to try to make sure that story got through. Because ultimately, they knew exactly where they were going with that thing. And by the way, you guys, if you want to see this in another movie, watch 22 Mile. That was a great movie. That had a triple twist in the end as well.
Mile 22.
That was Mile 22. Yeah.
Yeah, I got you.
Dope movie.
There's supposed to be good martial arts in that too.
Yes. Tony Jaa.
Equo Iwas? Butchering his name. I butcher everybody's names too.
You can take that role from me. You're allowed to have that.
No one's as good as it as Chris. He's real good.
We'll just tag it back and forth. Chris, your turn next.
Okay, well, speaking of butchering names, for the character Delphine, which was a gender swap for this movie,
right?
Sophia, not going to say her last name, played that role. How do you guys feel her character was, especially with interacting with Charlize?
Well, there was some good sex scenes. Can I add that to it? She was quite sensual through that process. And I believe that if she was portraying I'll go any which way to make a situation work, she did extremely well in that process. And Sophie Boutella held her own a little bit.
So I got to say, of all the movies that have you come back on Fergal, this is probably the one.
I kept it for you, Laurie. I wanted to make
pausing?
Sure. It
was... Were you rewind and watch again? Rewind and watch again?
No, he just has on a repeat. There's no rewinding.
He didn't even watch the rest of the movie.
That's all he wanted. What color was that? Oh, red launcher. Let's try it again.
He thought that was a twist.
That was a twist. That was certainly a twist.
They were twisting. There was some twisting going on.
Wow, I feel I actually might be getting a little red. It might be hard to doubt.
That scene with Charlize and Sophia, like, just in general, that you're right, Fergal. You think like James Bond is your traditional spy movie.
Yeah.
James Bond would not have done that. Meaning, like, you know, go for someone of the same sex. He would. I couldn't imagine James Bond doing that for a mission.
He's doing it in the movie Queer. It's not for a mission, but he's doing it in the movie Queer. Just thought I'd share you that process. It's going to make a lot of people go crazy, but look for Daniel Craig.
That's a reference I was not expecting for them.
I thought you totally derailed my train of thought. I was going to say something, and it was smart and poignant, and it's gone.
Welcome to Movie Smash.
Welcome to the show.
Aren't you glad I'm back?
Oh, I did forget to bring up, Fergal, that we are allowing you back. Did you learn your lesson about David Bowie and Ludacris?
Oh my God, listen, I'm going to say it right now. David Bowie is an amazing actor with a wide range of capability. However, he is not Tej.
This is your last episode. I'm sorry. You're done. Oh, no.
You know, if your concern is would David Bowie be good in Fast and Furious? No, probably not. I would say that's a good choice. You don't want him in there. But Ludacris, no. Otherwise, that's a ridiculous statement that you've made previously, 100%. And it stands still.
And just so you know, Fergal, I bring that up for actually a very good reason. The English, the MI6 agent in the interrogation room was going to be David Bowie.
They tried. Really? He wouldn't.
They tried. He passed away a few weeks after.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That would have been dope. Now, see, again, I'm going to say David Bowie, amazing, completely versatile actor. And when you see him walk upside down with the ball in his hand, it's just phenomenal.
And right? His music's in this movie.
It is. It's one of the first
he was going to do that in this movie. Did you know?
Wow.
Yeah, he's standing there interrogating or spinning a ball through his
face. Ludacris would have not fit in 1986 or whatever Berlin. '88, '89. He would have not fit in.
No.
And I'm going to say that out loud.
We should have gotten David Hasselhoff to do a walkthrough.
So it's funny. They did have the David Hasselhoff joke in there.
Yeah, like, they did. They should have just been like, I'm busy.
The studio actually wanted them to remove that joke. They didn't think it was funny.
Oh, it was hilarious.
It was hilarious. David Hasselhoff, we brought off for any reference, is always a good joke.
Yeah.
The character I do want to touch on, though, is the Watchmaker. Did you notice how he played a very large part through the whole movie, but he barely speaks?
Yes. Now, I wanted to talk about how there are parallels between Atomic Blonde, John Wick, and The Matrix. Because, again, Chad Stahelski, one of the guys from 8711, was Keanu Reeves' stuntman for most of the Matrix movies. So the Watchman and the Keymaker are very similar. They had a fight scene in Atomic Blonde where she was in front of the movie screen and it was raining. Remember in the last Matrix one, they were fighting in the rain the whole time. And then the subway station. I was like, is that the subway station from the Matrix? The first one when they had the fight, and then the train man had Keanu Reeves stuck at the subway station for a long time. So there's just, I see all these parallels. And then, of course, like Bill Skarsgård is in Atomic Blonde, and he's also in John Wick as the kid, right? He's the main kid that shoots the damn dog. So it's just like you're trying to, I see all these parallels because it's 8711, but the Watchmaker was such an interesting guy. Like,
I like how he shows up at the very, very, and at the second or third ending of the movie, he shows up.
So who was he really? Was he in it the whole time?
He was a CIA operative. His job, supposedly from the director's commentary, is he was basically, he would sell information. Remember how there's satchel? Well,
he had the codes inside the watches. He made those specialty watches.
He was trying to get the watch.
He was CIA. How did you intel that was CIA?
Not until the end.
Big spoiler for the people who are listening. Charlize Theron is Satchel. She's the one they're trying to hunt. But nonetheless, and if you know, Satchel was in trouble because Satchel was selling MI6 operatives, the names of those operatives, to the Russians.
Yeah.
Which means the CIA was selling those names to the Russians, and she was doing it through the Watchmaker, which is why the Watchmaker is with her even when she, later in the movie, when she's in that car.
Yeah, when she's leaving to go get on the plane, he was like, you know, take care of yourself. I forget what he says exactly, but he's there. And I'm like, what is he doing there? And so then it's just like, oh, so he was trying to get his hands on it, too. But the list never got to him. That Russian guy didn't take the watch off. Remember, he was like, show me the goods. And he was like, I don't think so. And then he got stabbed in the forehead and died. The end.
The end.
A good way to go, right?
Lobotomized.
So we've touched on a lot of the scenes of this movie, and I think let me back up. There is one other character I do want to discuss, and I think that character is the soundtrack of this movie.
Yes.
Ooh, yes.
Because it is a character of this movie.
Well, it's supposed to transport you back to the time when the Berlin Wall was falling. I mean, like, that was the whole, that's the
father figure.
There it is, right there.
When she's kicking everybody's ass.
Early on, when they would switch from West Germany to East Germany, it would switch to German.
Yes.
The songs would, which I thought was pretty neat. I mean, they didn't keep that going for the whole movie, but they did early on, 100%. And it was really neat. Like, one song switched. Oh, Nine Leopolins, I think. Or one of them switched, like, midstream immediately to the German version, which, I mean, that's pretty cool. So, and in general, I love those songs. So, but not, they fit. It wasn't like, it pulled me out of the movie. It wasn't like all of a sudden it was like, oh man, this is a great Metallica song for no reason in there, right? All these songs made sense for the time. They were very much, especially with the ability to switch to German, it was perfect fitting for this movie, but also I won't admit I wasn't humming along. Like I had to on some of those. So
it's funny you say that. During the director's commentary, the director and the editor were doing the commentary for us, and she had to remind the director not to sing along with the songs while the movie was playing. and they actually, when they were filming these scenes, they played the music on set so they could work to the beats. Nice. So like when Charlize Theron's walking down the streets of England, she's walking through that music in the background is playing. So her footfalls are on the notes if you watch it, cool. As well as the fight scenes when it's happening. The punches are on the notes, right? They're doing that to choreograph it with the music that's playing for that time as well. So they played all that music.
That's 8711 right there. By the way, while we've been talking, I've been looking up what they did. I mean, Day Shift, the vampire movie, Nobody? I didn't realize the scope of what they were putting together. That's some of the best fighting in all movies today. That's just some of the best, the most realistic fighting in all movies today.
Yes. So speaking of fighting, let's go back to the plot.
I gotta talk about the music. So the music was not only fitting for the time period of what was, you know, popular during the late 80s, but it was also telling you stuff that was happening in the movie. Like when they were trying to get Spyglass out and he got shot and like they just had the big fight in the apartment and they're in the car, right? It starts playing, and I ran so far away. Like it's telling you about the story. The fact that it was like, I will be your father figure. She's like, I'm your daddy.
Well, that would have been the Sophie Batella scene, I'm assuming, correct?
No, that was when she was kicking all their butts in the apartment.
That was before
they were trying to get Spyglass out. She went to raid, the first guy that died.
She went up the entire stairs and kicked everybody's ass and came out the window like she was ready to go with somebody else. That shit was dope as hell.
That's where they were playing George Michael. I will be your father figure. She's like, I'm your daddy. I'm going to own you right now. You see what I mean? So if you read into the lyrics of what was going on, even when James McAvoy was killing the French agent, Sophia, it was like voices carry, hush now. Yes. And he choked her. He suffocated her to death. You see what I mean? So it was like, there's so much thought that went into this movie. It's incredible. And it's like the songs are good, but they're telling you something too. I will shut up.
No problem. The only problem is that those songs, I think they all came out except for one in 83.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And Berlin was a hit place. Well, West Berlin was. So they would have been playing music that was new. No more timely. Mm-hmm. But that's just a little thing. They actually bring that up in the director's commentary too. He's like, that music just fit it better.
I need to watch the director's commentary now.
It's worth it. It's worth it.
You got to buy the steelbook, though, Lori. You got to buy the steelbook. It's just done.
Oh, I will buy it. take my money.
We've talked about action scenes, and that's really what the majority of this movie is. What was your favorite action scene?
The apartment. I thought that was probably – the water scene was cool.
Which
just
one,
for
though?
Set. The one where she jumped out the window when she jumped out, she took people coming up the stairs. You got to apologize. I apologize. I just saw most of this today, so I have had an opportunity to catch up with it. So the stuff's going in and out. I got work going on in a second, but when she kicked all the ass and she came out the window, that was the dopest scene.
Yeah.
Ever. That's like, I rewatched it and it was just, it's cool to watch. Like she knows the team that taught her. She picked up like John Wick. She picked up like Keanu Reeves. Mm-hmm. She really knows what the hell she's doing.
Mm-hmm. See, I think the other apartment scene where she's trying to escape with Spyglass and they have to run to the apartment and that's where she's has like, I guess the hardest fight, right? The longest fight solo one-on-one. Those are great. That's a great set of fight scenes because it's everyone's taking damage, right? So it's, you're watching both of them get very hurt and try to figure out how to like still keep things moving. And meanwhile, you have this guy in the background, like constantly bandaging himself up because he's bleeding out because he was shot earlier. Like it's a good tense fighting scene.
And that fighting scene, you're the one bringing up. That's what it feels like as like a single take. That's what it feels like. Yeah. The one that in that last fight. And now it isn't a single take. It's actually, Laura, you and I were talking about this earlier. It's 40 shots all stitched together to look like a single shot. And they pulled it off by anytime it zooms in on a weapon or on someone's back as being flipped over, they do a blur shot at that point so they can mesh the two shots together to get as a single shot. And the thing was, the director, he had been envisioning that shot or that style of action for years and just had no place to put it. And his wife, who is the one of the producers of the movie, she's like the creative lead or something, said, if you're going to do it now. Like, just try it. And the thing is, they were worried about the budget, so they had, I think, two attempts at it. That's like the only amount of money they had to do to pull it off. They said, if it doesn't work, you can stitch it together however you want.
It's always the wife that has the smart ideas. Look, I'm married. Lori's met my wife. She knows who the smart one is.
That's right, sir. I'll pay
you for me. Later. I love that tunnel scene where she gets off the plane.
Yeah,
and she's in there and she beats the guy to death with her shoe.
Yes.
I've always wanted to choreograph a fight scene where I take off my heels and just kick someone's ass with my shoes. Always wanted to do it.
It's a classic. It brings up why they're called stilettos.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But that tunnel where that fight occurs is the same tunnel from Civil War.
And.
Oh, it was
are we talking about Marvel Civil War? Are we talking when the whole exchange?
No, Captain America Civil War.
Captain America, Civil War, where they did the shield and the whole Bucky. Thing.
Really?
He's running after Bucky, and then the Black Panther is chasing him in that tunnel. Yeah. That's that tunnel. And it's also in Hunger Games.
That's what it was. That's Hunger Games, they're chasing Snow.
Right? Yeah.
Wow, I just learned something new. Did everybody get that from the commentary edition?
But I love the pacing of that, where she's like, all right, I'm undercover. I just got into Germany. And it's like, you've been made. Try to kill you now. It's like, damn it.
I love also that they drop the line where they go, do you have any luggage? She goes, no, I sent them ahead.
Yeah.
And that line is put in there because they wanted her to be able to do many, many, many costume changes throughout the movie. And to carry that kind of luggage would be ridiculous. And also, he always felt that was a plot hole James Bond movies always have. Like, he shows up these places with no luggage, and he's able to have three or four suits, a tuxedo. How does he pull it off? In this case, she just drops the single line of,
I already sent it.
That we sent it ahead.
I was waiting for her to actually have a head, but no, she didn't.
Speaking of the writing for it, just a little fact for you. One of these I picked up there in the commentary is, a lot of this movie is 80-yard.
Really?
It is not the original text for it, what they originally said. They changed a lot of lines up. They filmed a lot of scenes not knowing where they were going to use them. So any scene you see them on the phone, have headphones on, or they're listening to music, they filmed those separately, not sure where they're going to put them. Mm-hmm. And also the investigation scene, there's a scene after the investigation or early on where she's talking with – like she's being briefed for the mission.
Yeah.
Like she's in that office. Mm-hmm. Originally, she was not going to be in that room. And there was a whole separate scene where she's being briefed. They merged them all together to be one scene. So a lot of those lines were ADR to make it make sense, because it didn't make sense, the fact that if she wasn't in the room, how does she know that conversation happened to be retelling it during the investigation?
Gotcha.
To me, is amazing considering what happened with Madame Web, where that movie was really ADR'd and it's pretty obvious.
I'm not going to see that one. Sorry.
No, you got to see it. Got to see it. You have to. Just hold the belief back a little bit and run through that one. It's kind of fun.
Fergal, we'll watch it once someone on Patreon pays us to do it.
Yeah, I was like, you can pay me to see the movie maybe, but I've heard nothing but bad things about that movie.
Horrible.
And I have this much time in my day to watch good quality things. Or like try something new. So when I watch Crapola, it just makes me mad because I've wasted my 2 hours that I get in a day.
You know what, Lori? I just watched Rebel Ridge this weekend, and we talk about Rebel Ridge, the new Netflix movie. And one of the things you mentioned is this idea that in the type of martial arts they're displaying in this movie, that you can use any weapon at your disposal, kind of the Baba Yaga three men with a pencil situation. Yes. There is a unit in the Marines called MSCOPs. That's their whole line is one mind, any weapon. That's their whole motto. That scares the shit out of me, right? Like, that's one mind, any weapon given to them. That's crazy.
That's me. I do that. Give it to me. I don't care what it is. Like, when she's kicking someone's ass with a ladder, I was like, see? That's all you need. You just walk in a room, you just grab something, kick his ass.
Wow.
Well, it's funny. There's that scene where she's in the fighting the cops in front of the apartment, and she's beating the hell out of them, right? Originally, that was going to be multiple angles. They did a single take just because she pulled it off in a single take.
Mm-hmm.
So the look on her face when she pulls down, she's like sort of like happy. Yeah. It's because she pulled that shot off.
Right. On the first try. Yeah. That's when they were like, well, we don't need to. That's fine. Cut.
The editor, both the editor and the director, they constantly said that this movie was under a very, very tight budget.
$30 million.
They were amazed they could pull off what they could make.
It made 130 million. I mean, I don't understand why we don't have Atomic Blonde too.
Well, we'll get to that in a second.
It's funny you mentioned that.
We'll save that for what happens next, Fergal. So let's talk about pacing, guys. This movie is 115 minutes, so just shy of two hours. How do you feel about the pacing? Did it move quickly? Did it move slow?
Didn't really have any dead parts. I think it kept from start to finish. From the moment she got in to the moment she exited to the twist at the end, which is, I think, the only part that felt slightly slowed down. I think they emphasized more of the twist at the end.
I thought it started a little bit slow, but I think you needed to learn the key players. So I don't think it was bad that it was slow, but it wasn't like nonstop action the whole time, right? There was definitely some scenes that it slowed down a little bit where I had to think, like, who am I seeing? How, what, you know, what nationality is this person supposed to be? What side are they on? Try to keep track of everybody. But I think you needed that. Otherwise, you wouldn't get the twist and you wouldn't understand kind of the nuance of the fact that she's telling you this story, basically. So you've got to really pay attention to, is this even what happened? Like with the French spy that she has, you know, that she befriends and has that scene that Fergal liked with. Was that really, true? Like, did that actually happen? Or is that giving her a reason why she said, well, that's why I killed him, because I've grown attached to this person and he killed her, so I killed him, right? Like, so is that even true?
No.
It definitely perked the MI6 guy. The MI6 guy listened.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, but if you didn't pay attention to that early things.
She could have killed Spyglass. She could have killed the French agent. She could have killed all of those people because she was a double agent and that list was out there. People were figuring out her true identity and she could have taken them all out. And this could have been a complete fabrication. We could have just had a Kaiser Soze moment where everything was fabricated. That's what gets me at the end is like, you don't know if anything she said was the truth.
Well, what gets me too is the first guy killed in this movie, the guy with the mustache, I forgot what the character's name was. And he's supposed to be, you get a sense early on that she knows him, like he's a past lover or something.
Yeah.
And there's even that scene where he's under a blanket so see them, you know, rolling around, which by the way, they filled in the back of the studio. They just threw a blanket on his head for the day. It's just him by himself with a camera. Holding a camera. It's no one else is in there with him.
That's a low risk.
And then, but you realize he says to the Russian agent, Satchel gave me up. And then you make the connection at the very end of the movie. She's Satchel.
Mm-hmm.
The person that you thought the whole movie that she had this connection with, you think maybe there's like a revenge plot in here. She says she's never been to Berlin. Who knows? But yeah, she's the one that gave him up.
Gosh, that's what I mean. The line that she said to the French agent, she was like, these relationships aren't real and they're a means to an end. And the girl was like, your eyes change when you tell the truth. And then she said, thanks for letting me know. I won't do it again.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is what I'm saying. She could have lied about everything.
Wow.
And which means also that relationship was a means to an end.
It was. That's what I'm saying. Like, you think Percival killed the French agent? She could have killed the French agent because she was spying and she could have figured it out. Like, the Russian guy died, Percival died, the French agent died. They're all dead.
Well,
the only one that made it out was the watchmaker.
The French agent, she's like, oh, she took photos of Percival and the Russian agent talking, but that means that never happened. So did she take pictures of Lorraine and the Russian agent? Who knows? So yeah, it's great.
You don't know. It could have been Lorraine that took those pictures.
Oh, that's true.
I would hazard a guess and say Lorraine is colder than James Bond.
She's cold. Yeah.
I put her up on John Wick. I like to see the two of them go.
I think she's colder than John Wick.
John Wick has emotion. John Wick has a heart. He's like his wife and his dog. He has feelings. And Lorraine is like, none of you matter. It's a means to an end.
Wow.
Yeah, I will be right your father figure.
You have a hands bank on it too.
Yeah.
We kind of mentioned before, Lorraine is actually a CIA agent, which she speaks with an American accent at the end of the movie. Did you notice the times through the movie, she is slipping into her American accent at times.
Oh yeah.
She makes that mistake.
Well, even the Spyglass even says like your German accent is shit at one point. Cause German I think she's slipping
sucks.
There.
You need to work on that. And then she's like, oh yeah, I'm driving you into this pond and you're going to die. Talk about my German, William. Dead.
For me, I felt the movie was a good pace. I did not notice the 2 hours going by. I would say to people, if you're going to watch this movie, it is a 4-hour commitment because you want to watch it once and you're going to want to come back to it. because it's a different experience the second time through once you realize what's actually happening with this movie. But yeah. Pacing-wise, I thought it worked out great. The editor did a fantastic job. She's from Iceland. Did a fantastic job.
I think the pacing was good, too. I think sometimes it was difficult to follow all the different characters. Like, kind of like Jeremy said, there was the Russian guys. There was the German guys. There was the story with Spyglass. There was the French agent. There was the watchmaker. There was Percival. There was the guys in the interrogation. There was just a lot of moving parts. So the only reason I gave it 9 stars out of 10 is sometimes it's confusing to follow the story. But I think it was purposefully so because, again, it's a spy drama. Nobody knows whose side anybody is on. And it's convoluted, again, just because it's a retelling. Like, it really is done masterfully, but I think that could trip up some people. Like, who is Bill Skarsgård in this? What's his role?
The standalone piece of it, I completely agree with you. I think this, but here's the thing. You've got so many spy movies. It's a play genre. Spy is a play genre from every angle and every way. So I think this was, given the environment that it was competing against and opened in the same year as John Wick 2 that did well north of $100+ million. And people burn out of these movies fast because John Wick is kind of the bar to be set. This movie held its own literally in the same year as John Wick. And that's something to be said about for a lot. I think, again, to your point, 8711, I think it's the same reason why you look at certain movies and you're like, that shit is holding up really well because they take a little extra effort in the movie and make it very much a movie that you could watch again just to pick up new pieces.
Yeah. Do you know who David Leitch is? I'm sure you guys know. He was a stuntman first, and he was typically Brad Pitt's stuntman. So Mr. and Mrs. Smith,
Bullet Train,
anything that you see, Ocean's movies with Brad Pitt, David Leitch was doing his stunts before he even got into acting. That's how him and Chad Salsky got together, is being stunt guys together. So it's incredible. Now some of the movies that they're turning out that just
I'm looking at the list. They've not made a movie that hasn't, I mean, very clearly a vast majority of what 8711 is tied to has done well north of $100 million. And there are sequels to just about every one of the movies. So these guys have made a movie. They built a formula and they can change it up almost interchangeably.
What did I say? I wrote down, this is incredible to me, where it's like David Leitch has director credits, 14, producer credits, 28, and stuntman credits, 82. So they've been in the business a long time. Same thing with Chad Stalsky. Director credits, 15, producer, 22, stunt, 77. And they're big name stuff. So it's like these guys know, they know the formula. They know it because they've been in the movies and they've seen what works. They understand what, how to make the scenes, the action look good and how to, the pacing. I mean, John Wick, chef's kiss. Mwah.
And they did Deadpool. I didn't know they did. They did Deadpool 2?
Deadpool 2.
Yeah. Deadpool 2. He did. Really? David Leitch is the director. Mm-hmm.
So that whole, I would have thought he did Deadpool 3. He didn't do that one as well. They didn't jump in on that one because that was a good fight scene too.
Yeah, they had good fights too. Who directed that one? I'm going to go look it up. But it's not the topic that you're talking about. But I'm going to go look it up for myself.
So for this movie, not Deadpool, for this movie, what did you guys love about it? What could they have done better?
I think they were cramming a lot in a short movie. They were putting a lot in this movie. You could have actually stretched this out even a little bit more. It could have been a series on Netflix. You could have made this. You could have stretched it a little. I think they put a lot in a short movie. And I think that's the only drawback to it. To Jeremy's point, you didn't have to go. And even to your point, you got to rewatch it twice to kind of get the full thing. But I think the action was absolutely dope as shit.
I think that was the plan, though.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think I don't know what I would change in it because I really did. After I watched it, I was very happy with the whole experience. At first, you know, midway through, you weren't quite sure. But once you get the twist and everything, I was like, this is great. But the music, top notch. That was easily my favorite thing about this movie. I love the fact that it's a soundtrack that I not only enjoyed thoroughly, but it didn't pull me out of the movie. There's too many times where the soundtrack to a movie just like it just doesn't fit. And it kind of pulls you out and reminds you that you're watching a movie instead of in the experience. So this one, I felt like it kept me in there.
Well, Jeremy, this was not Evanescence for Daredevil.
Oh, thank God.
Wow, that got thrown together. Those are two words that was interesting.
Yeah, can you imagine? That would be great. I wouldn't change anything either. I enjoyed it the way it was. I really don't think you could have had a better cast connected between Charlize and James McAvoy, John Goodman, Toby Jones, Sophia, Bill Skarsgård is in there. Sam Hargrave is in there. There's a ton of people in this movie. It's just, they did a fabulous job. The fights are great. The music is great. You're sucked in. There's no point where you fall out of the movie. So, and it takes you for a wild ride.
Yeah, I'd second that. I don't really see much of a change here. For real, I disagree. As a TV show, I don't think it would work as well as a TV show. It's nice, it's encapsulated, it's tight, the pacing for it. And you brought the thing about there's so many characters, I can't pay attention to them all. I think that's done on purpose because she's telling the story. So I think she's like, pay attention to these pawns over here. So you don't know what's happening with all these other ones over here, like the watchmaker.
Yeah.
So you don't know what's really happening. Like,
well, that's what you said with Laurie as well. In the whole back end of the movie, it could have been, she could have made the whole damn thing up. Everything could have been completely different. And that's when I first saw the movie, that was my initial thought. Like, what the hell? What the F is going on towards the end of this movie? And that's kind of the reason why I said I thought that was the only thing that could have linked it. Because it would, I think you could slow down and tell that, you could expand that universe pretty far. She's a compelling character to expand the universe into.
Now, the one thing I like about it is, you brought up Peter Soze from Usual Suspects.
Kaiser Soze.
I got a head cold. I'm sorry. But Usual Suspects, Kaiser Soze. The one thing I liked about this versus that is at the end of the movie, it didn't go through and explain to me why it's a bad narrator, right? For Usual Suspects, it showed clips, showed scenes that actually happened. It tells me, it lays it out saying, here's what you should have seen. This, it's like, did you see it? Did you not see it?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah. But I love that feeling of, did I just get told a whole line of bullshit? What I like about The Usual Suspects is like that it's the moment where he's looking at the board and he sees all the things that the guy just told him. And he was like, he just made up a story based off of the stuff on my wall. But like you said, in this one, it's like they don't tell you if it's true or not. You're just left with, now that you know who she really is any of it true?
Yeah, there's like little bits on there, like, there's a lot of people on lists who have an area code of 212. That's New York, right? Mm. If you don't know that, you can't pick up on that. There's a lot of little hints late to that movie to say, this is not, what she's telling us is not true.
Mm-hmm.
But what parts of it are true, I don't know. So the question we always like to ask at this point is, should they make a sequel? Now, that being said, there is a sequel in production.
There is.
Production hell, actually. Let's call it production. It's Netflix has talked to it. It's her company. But if I'm not mistaken, it hasn't really moved forward, right? Because I was just Googling that while we were discussing, while I was also Googling Alias 7-Eleven, which I'm quite impressed with.
Well, the one thing I've learned through our show here about Charlize Theron is if she wants to make something happen, she makes it happen. No, she got Old Guard. She got The Coldest City. So I think she's just looking for a script from what I've seen so far.
Well, the people they have attached as writers are the guys that wrote the book, the graphic novel, not people that write movies. She has the book, the original book. Those guys are the ones that are listed as writers for this next
project. Now, Laurie, as a writer, as someone who writes the written word for comics, I know that the adaption from a book to a movie is taking a 2D to a 4D dimension. And it's a completely different how your dialogue is going to actually play out on screen. I got to ask you, this is my intellectual question of the day. How do you feel about that as a writer for yourself and saying, okay, now I need you to give me these amazing characters and bring them to life in a way that's different than your comic?
So here's the thing. When I started writing my story, it's written as a screenplay. And so I don't necessarily have that problem. I'm usually cutting dialogue out of my fully fleshed characters in order to fit it on the page. I don't have to go the other way. So mine is already there. But I can see what you're saying, because you're not getting the whole story on the page. What I really like about my story written as a screenplay is it's fleshed out and you get those big moments like where they're really explaining what's going on. And in the comic, unfortunately, a lot of times we have to paraphrase or we have to cut it out, but you can show it with the art. And so that's the challenge, is to get a true representation of what's happening in that comic on the page. And I don't know how their original script is written. Was it written in screenplay format? Was it written in comic book format? Because those are different.
So they were going for a literal interpretation. Their whole process, Anthony Johnson's reasoning for opening his own publishing house was he wanted to take the graphic novel as a medium and sort of up it by a couple degrees. And I quote, the discerning reader.
Well, and there's a difference between a graphic novel and an issue, because an issue is typically 24 to 28 pages, somewhere around there. So you got to, again, it's the same thing like Atomic Blonde. There's no time to have fluff. There's no time to have filler when you have only 24 pages to tell your story. You need character development and everything. You need action. You need a beginning and a twist at the end. Like, you have to be so concise. But with a graphic novel, you don't really have a page count. You can do whatever you want. And so you can have those breathing moments to maybe have more exposition. So I don't know. I haven't read it. So I'd be interested to see, you know, the difference between the two. That's always interesting to me. What made it from the page to the screen and why?
For me, I've always looked at these movies. The reason I like comic book movies or movies based on comics, obviously the comic book is a good storyboard for them to start with. Now, if you'd like to see the concept, I'd actually recommend going to the special edition of the movie, like I have, of course. There is actually where they show the storyboard translated for that first scene where she's walking into the embassy at the very beginning, or the MI6, rather. So they're showing the storyboard parallel next to the actual shots that are happening for it. And it's interesting sort of watching what they wrote down, their notes on it, versus what actually came to the screen.
That's cool. I like that. I always like those behind the scenes moments, you know what I mean? In my trade paperback, I have portions of the script so that people can read, you know, how like the big James chase happens in the first issue versus what made it into the comic. So it's always interesting to me to see those parallels. Like, there's usually more to it than what you're getting.
See, now that was my intellectual question for the day, and you're welcome.
Thanks for coming to Fergal's TED Talk.
So personally, I would love to see a sequel to this movie. I hope it makes it come out. Now, I would prefer it to be a cinematic release versus a Netflix release because the big screen, I think, does well for these kind of movies. And also, there's more money in it. There really is. A Netflix release, because more money – the reason I say it's important is because more money means more movies like this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? I want to see this movie do well in the cinema versus just doing well on streaming. Because, like, we did Old Guard a few weeks ago – or a few months ago, actually, at this point. Not as good as this movie, but I also think it just disappeared into Netflix.
Yeah.
Yes, it did.
Like, it came out, we happened to see it during COVID.
Yes.
And I only saw it because we watched Warrior Nun, and it recommended that movie to us as the next movie to watch.
I did not like Warrior Nun.
Neither did I.
I'll throw that out there.
It disappears, right? People don't know about it. And you look at it, and it's hard. You basically get a title card. Is that what I want to watch? Who knows? Like, so I'd love to see it go in the cinema and get the full trailer. Now, speaking of trailers, I forgot to bring this up earlier. Have you guys actually watched the trailer for this movie?
No.
It's the end of the movie.
Shut up. I haven't seen it. I'm sure we saw it back in 2017 because we made the choice to go to the theater. They put the end of the movie in the trailer?
Where she's in the hotel room in Paris. Mm-hmm. That's the scene they put in the trailer.
Those bastards.
Now, if you have no idea what's going on, it makes no sense. But it is hilarious that the final scene is the trailer for the movie.
That makes me laugh because that's something that I would do to torment my readers. Like, ha ha ha, look at this. It's no context. And you're like, you just spoiled everything. Spoilers with no context.
Should people go out and find this movie?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, yes. And it's one that you don't need to have read the original to appreciate it. Like, none of us read it, but I really liked it. And there's been other movies we've done where you can clearly tell, like, I'm missing something, but this didn't happen, which is great.
Yeah, and what's funny, it's on Tubi right now. It's
on Tubi, it's on Amazon Prime, and it's what's called Freevee, so it's free with ads.
Freevee, yes.
That's where I watched it.
Is coming in Spanish? Mine's coming in Spanish. I got to fix the whole thing. I don't know how the hell my language came in Spanish. Okay, I've been trying to watch Overlord. And I've literally got a language filter that won't come off. I'm trying to stop it. Going on with my freebie? I'm trying to
fix
that.
You're like my kids. My kids are like, Mom, it's in Spanish again. I'm like, what are you doing?
I have no idea.
It's the medications you're on. You just wake up one day. It'll be Russian next week.
That'd be great.
I'd say people should go out and find this thing. I think people should go out and own this thing. It's a really good movie, especially if you plan on watching it multiple times. And the special bonus features on the DVD, it's worth watching.
Gosh, do I?
And the steelbook is beautiful.
Nice. I think you should do anything by 8711. Honestly, as I sit here and continue to watch their list, and now I'm on their website, I think literally anything by this studio, you're not going to be turned away and be upset with at all.
For this movie, how would you guys rate it? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
Well, I give a thumbs up to the whole movie, and I definitely like the Sophie Boutella scene. I'm just going to say it outright. I love my wife. I'm very happily married. but I absolutely enjoy that scene.
You should have given it two scissors.
That was for you. That was great. Thank you for making my night, Lori. Thank you so much for making my
night. I'm so glad you invited me on this show. I'm just going to give it two thumbs up. Regular old two thumbs to the soundtrack of I Will Be Your Father thing.
I'm going to give it a right thumb up. No, actually, it's a left thumb up. And for the first time, a full thumb up movie for me. Never happened on this so far.
There it is.
There it is. I'd give it a full thumbs up as well. I just love this movie. I can't say that enough. I watched it three times in preparation for this episode.
I think we should give Lori a thumbs up on George Michael. Because there seems to be a George Michael thing
going
on.
That's what I want, is a George Michael thumbs up. And two scissors.
Before we go, guys, I do want to – we've had a lot of guests on lately, so I haven't had a chance to go over your mailbag. But we did actually get a review come in recently, and I want to let you know the review. 5 stars. Nice pod about friends discussing movies based on comics, not Marvel. Deep dives, lots of laughs, highly recommend.
Oh, well, that's nice. I expected a full gut punch out of that, so I appreciate a nice positive review.
The internet's mean. The internet is a really – even Facebook's got mean lately. I was hoping for something fun. Like my cat crossed the street and got hit. Why are you on the radio? Why am I listening to you folks?
Lori, where can people find you? And what are you working on right now?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm all over the dang place. If you like podcasts, guess what? I do 3. So I do the Tuesday Morning Brew every Tuesday. You can find that on my YouTube channel or on the Madness Comic Network YouTube channel, where it's 2-hour show every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I interview indie comic creators, artists, authors, ventriloquists, actors. You heard me right. Anybody and everybody who is a creative can come on that show. On Wednesdays, I host the Any One World Showcase. Any One World and ASAP Imagination is one of my publishers. And so we have a show for those creators, which is 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Only 45 minutes on Wednesdays on their YouTube channel. And then I just started a new show called Killer Karen, where I put on a blonde wig and the personality of this character named Karen Needlemeyer. And I am a Karen to my guests. They have to sign a waiver before they come on. I am obnoxious and we have a good time. Everybody's in on the joke, I promise.
Can I be Fergal Ken?
You can come on if you can handle the heat. That's all I got to say.
Brothers. I grew up with 5 brothers and I'm named Fergal. There's not too much heat I can handle.
Yeah, this is true. But Karen will eat you up and spit you out. That's what
with a stiletto heel.
Oh.
It's like the old Martin Short bit.
Yes. So we have fun on that show. That one's brand new. And that airs every Friday at 7 p.m. It's every other week. I have a website. I'm pathofthepalewriter.com. I don't have any campaigns running right now, but you can get my books on my website. I have a shop, and you can also get my books on ASAP Imagination. That's where you can get the physical copy with international shipping. It's from asapimagination.com or anyoneworld.com. And again, Path of the Pale Rider is a full immersive experience. We have a comic book. I write riddles. So you can immerse yourself in the world, solve riddles, and interact with the world like it's real. And I also produce short films. And so you can see me get run over by a car if you would like. Those videos are on my YouTube, but they're all based in the world of Path of the Pale Rider. So we do conspiracy theories. We do news reports, commercials for the undead. We have fun. And people can participate in those as well.
Awesome. And Jeremy, where can people find you?
Well, I'm always on this podcast called Movie Smash. Comes out every 2 weeks. Talk about comic book related movies. Also, I'm one of the hosts of the Retrovaniacs podcast, and I have just started a new project on the One Rad podcast feed, where I will be the third wheel on the new season of 20XX, where we rank and review all the Mega Man games, this time all the handheld ones.
Wow. And Fergal, where can people find you?
Well, I don't quite live as fast and furious life. I'm recovering from a pretty serious motorcycle accident, but for right now, you can find me getting ready to lay the foundation of bringing my store back at some point very closely in the future. We're working on it. We're going to call it Gotham Knight Returns. We're going to bring this thing back. And I'm excited about that. But for right now, I'm just kind of recovering from the bike accident. As I said at the beginning of the show, I'm unkillable. So I'm working on making sure I stay that way. And it should be fun for me. So I wouldn't want to be on a John Wick or a Tom Bond situation because I don't think they could do me in. I'm a fluffy captain.
Lori, thank you for joining us today. And for me, you can always find me over at Off Panel Creations, where I'm always building some piece of nerdy furniture. I want to thank our listeners for spending some time with us today. And if you have any thoughts about Atomic Blonde and how this is Charlize Theron's second best movie, send us a note over at movie-smash.com, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. This has been Movie Smash with Chris Roberts, Jeremy Parmentier, and Fergal Amayo. Produced by me, Chris Roberts. Executive produced by Off Panel Creations, LLC. Movie clips provided by the respective studios. You can rate and review the show at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You might even find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for us? Visit us at movie-smash.com and send us a note. It too can be read on a future episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Movie Smash wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I would not want to meet her in a back alley. She'd kick my ass and take my wallet.